Elitus Global Solutions presents the Subject to Talent podcast, a hub for global workforce leaders to unleash the power of human enterprise. Listen in as we explore the most innovative and transformational topics impacting businesses today.
Hi, I'm Bruce Morton, the host of the Subject to Talent podcast. Today I'm joined by a very good friend of mine, Jeff Newton. Jeff is the co-founder of the Contingent Workforce Institute. He almost doesn't need an introduction, but I'll go with one anyway. A very distinguished figure in our industry. He's been a founder of several companies going back in the day, including FlexTrack, People 2.0, and more recently, Independently. He also serves as a national board member and the chair for the Canadian Staffing Association, and is a heavily sought-after speaker and consultant. I'll end the intro there, otherwise we'll run out of time. But welcome to the podcast, Jeff. We're so pleased you could join us today.
Thanks, Bruce. And it's always a pleasure talking to you over the years, you know, at various conferences and events and things like that. We've always had such great conversations on where the industry is going and what's happening, right? So thank you for having me as a guest.
We always seem to be in sync. We arrive at the bar at the same time. I don't know how that happens, but anyway.
That's where a lot of creativity happens, I think.
Exactly. At AGS Subject to Talent podcast, we always ask our guests the same first question. That is, how did you get into this wonderful industry and what was your journey to get to where you are today?
Well, like a lot of people, you don't expect when you grow up to be a recruiter, right? Yeah. But I was in business school, and this was before the internet, which is kind of a funny, I do want to date myself to a certain respect. There's somewhat of a pride in that. And thought, wow, technology is incredible. Like the computers were just coming out and every few years they were advancing so greatly that every, you know, you'd buy a $3,000 piece of hardware and a year and a half later, you'd buy another one. So I thought, okay, I got to be in IT. And as a business student, you end up thinking about where your career is and often goes into consultant. So I applied to a newspaper ad, Bruce. Newspaper ad. Just want to also date myself on that. And thought I was joining, you know, a big four consulting house for IT consulting. And it turned out it was a smaller shop, but it was more of a recruiting house. Right. And I found, you know, I was really good at it, and the money was great. And, you know, helping people find jobs was pretty awesome, I thought, at the time. And, you know, the kind of the rest is history of getting into what you introduced, worked for a large staffing firm, helped them build their MSP VMS solutions before they were actually called, you know, MSP VMS. Yeah. Right. And we made those acronyms up as a way to market it, and then got into the really heavily into the employer of record and agent of record game in around that era. So that would have been early 2000s or so. And then started my own firm that merged with People 2.0 to be one of the founders of People 2.0. And kind of the rest is history from there. We sold the company in 2021. And instead of golfing, I found out that I'm not a great golfer. And I decided, hey, had a bunch of great conversations with people. And there's so much happening in our industry that I've come back into it and founded another company called Independently, a technology-based company.
Great. Well, I want to get into that a bit later. But today we're going to delve into the future of the contingent workforce space. Can you give us some context on the lens that you look through of how the contingent space and indeed the whole of the world of work is changing and has changed over the last few years?
Well, you know, there's a bunch of things that have really transformed it, right? There's what we've seen even recently, but as we know, there's economic cycles up and down. And each time that has happened, the relationship between the worker and the organization, it's really severed the loyalty of both, right? To the extent that now we're seeing companies not even having the grace or to have conversations, human conversations with people they're about to let go. they just cut off their access to a system. They cut off access to a business, a location or a property. And you find out by the information security people that when you're trying to log in, you no longer work for the company. And that's kind of baloney, really. And I'm trying to keep my words nice for this PG, let's call it. And that has progressively happened over the last, 15, 20 years, and really has peaked. So when you start thinking about that, it really moves towards contingent workers. And the general tenure of an employee these days is a year and a half to 2 years. And a very sought after consultant, guess what? Their tenure often is longer.
Right.
Yeah. In that 18, 2 years, 3 years with employers than full-time employees. And so there's always exceptions to those rules. But when you look on averages, there's a real convergence of not knowing what's full-time or what's contingent anyway. So you're seeing a real push towards this flexible workforce. So that's really one thing that's really driving it. Demographics is another, right? Demographics, we had the baby boom, large population. Now we're whittling it down as they're going into retirement. And so you've got, a very loyal, older, lots of wisdom in that generation is now exiting the workforce. So that's changing the dynamics. And you've got a much smaller group of individuals moving into that management role, but often not ready, right, in terms of the tenure, experience, the knowledge of what happened. And then you've got millennials that are the CEOs of their own company or want to be CEO on day three, right, of the company. So they're upwardly mobile and don't really take no for an answer, and they'll look towards being consultants as well. So you look at all the demographics, the loyalty equation between workers and organizations. And then you have a pandemic that has really accelerated this remote flex work arrangement on a global basis. So now, at any given time, you can work for any company around the world through this beautiful technology that's enabled working together. And then, of course, the freelance platforms have really enabled that as well. Mm-hmm. That allows you to find a job or find a worker anywhere in the world, right? So it's a really exciting time in our industry. And I see that only continuing, that flex work, that knowledge work, the remote work, the globalization of the workforce, right? Which is exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting that, here we are only a few years away from pre-pandemic. And if you'd have said to somebody 3 years ago, oh, let's jump on a video call, I want to chat with you, they're like, that's a weirdo. Why would you want to be on video? And then here we are now, my whole day, and I'm sure yours as well, is spent in this format. The idea of an actual phone call is, wow, that's pretty unique if you're just speaking to somebody.
Well, I'm forcing myself to do it so I get exercise, right? Yeah. That's really, I'm walking and talking, I call it. So that I get a little bit of exercise versus sitting in this chair all day, looking at a screen and having to be somewhat presentable.
So those changes you mentioned, Jeff, I think there's another element that we've spoken about a lot is the fact that none of this could be done without the advancement of technology as well. And even at a independent worker level, they're able to be on a freelance platform because they have access to great technology that they can then submit their work on or create whatever they're creating and so on. So I think that in itself has been a expediter. And you shared a story with me. I'd love you to share it for the audience here, the Taylor Swift story, which has nothing to do with the Kansas City Chiefs, but told me, let's be Swifties for a second.
Yeah, well, everybody's got to jump on the Swiftie bandwagon. But the whole idea of making money through, the internet is just so easy, right? There's so many side hustles you can do that then turn into full-time hustles. Right. And so the Taylor Swift story, of course, there's such demand for the tickets. She's a phenomena, and there's such a great following that a friend of mine actually, you know, wanted to get tickets, didn't get tickets through the, you know, the, if anybody's a parent of girls and or, you know, Swifties, let's call them. I won't say mainly girls, but, you know, I have two 20 and 19 year old daughters that wanted tickets. And I think we were as parents having to go through that process of getting a code, then logging in at a certain time. And it was just a pure lottery, basically. A friend of mine said, oh, geez, I didn't get the code, but I really want to provide the experience for my daughter. And so she took it upon herself to say, huh, why don't I think about paying the exorbitant prices that you're now seeing on StubHub and, you know, online, the reseller market. And she started her own little business selling Taylor Swift gift baskets for Christmas and custom design mugs, etc., that she actually didn't have to put any money up. She, you know, it's all drop shipped and she designed them, but it's all online through the various marketplaces that are drop shipped, produced and drop shipped right to the customers all over the world via these various technologies. And she ended up making more than enough to buy top tickets for Taylor Swift, getting a flight across the continent and an unbelievable hotel room right at the concert, which I'm a Torontonian or in Canada. There's a hotel right at the stadium where she's playing. Right. And so she's staying where Taylor Swift is. And it was all paid for by doing these interesting gigs, right? And selling things online, which is the creator economy that's often called, right?
Yeah, that's just such a great example. Thanks for sharing that. So as a couple of, well, I'll age myself and you can take it upon yourself. As an aging baby boomer, you know, living, I've been in the industry 45 years now, and, you know, as head of strategy, I sometimes call myself as head of frustration because you're trying to get things changed, you know, the speed of light and things take time. But how can we help organizations and individuals move past those viewpoints of yesteryear and truly, you know, take on this new world and actually benefit, utilize, and exploit everything you've just been talking about, but at the enterprise level as well as the individual level?
Yeah, it's interesting because the workforce is longing for it, right? Especially after the pandemic and what we're seeing the organizations, again, we've had a little bit of an economic cycle so that the loyalty has been broken a lot of the times. But also, even if you are working, you're being asked to commute back into the office often. Right. And the workforce is not taking highly to that, and they're looking for alternatives, be it alternative jobs with other organizations that have hybrid or more flexible work arrangements, but ideally that they don't have to go in to work at all, and they're working on their own terms, right? And I don't blame organizations because I do believe there's more productivity by being in the office and engaging with your colleagues. The learning is fantastic, but it is a very change. You know, the world of work has changed in terms of it's really in the hands of the workforce versus the employer saying thou shalt, right? And top talent will be mobile if you tell thou shalt to them. They just will be. They're going to say, I want to work this way, and you tell them otherwise, they've got an eye out the door, and there's technology enabling them, other organizations enabling them to change. To take advantage, though, is really, I love the word pilot, right? And so you start to have to think around doing things strategically and testing them and experimenting with them. And calling them pilots where you see it as an experimentation is the best way to at least try some of these new waves of doing things, hiring people through platforms, crowdsourcing where you know, you've got a task to do and you hire, you bid it out onto the crowd to get multiple viewpoints and multiple people working on them simultaneously and get to get the task done. Actually, even changing the way you do work from the person in the seat on a 40-hour work week to, hey, I need this done, this task done. And it really doesn't matter if the person takes 40 hours in that week to do it or 2 hours, and I'll pay for this task. So there's a lot of neat ways and neat things happening, but, you know, old ways tend to take precedent. It's what people know, how organizations know, how governments know how, you know, to govern and create regulations, is that traditional way of working. And so, you know, it's going to be a slow way to do it, but I find that word pilot and experimenting is key to at least trying it and gaining confidence that it's to see some successes, right? It's just like when we got into the industry way back when, and we started talking about the MSPs and VMS technology, it was a good time. They were invented well before 2008, 2009, but it was the economic downturn that actually helped us sell it as a free way to save money for organizations. And we went into that vendor-funded model, telling clients to centralize and you're going to save a bunch of money, and it's not really coming out of your pocket. And that's how that centralized workforce management was created, right? So, but even then you were piloting them and choosing what departments. You didn't do the big bang, we're just going to do a big global implementation right off the bat. You took baby steps to move towards the bigger goals.
Yeah, and you think that's about finding the right organization to go on that journey, or is it about the individuals in the organization? How do you choose the...
I think it's both, right? So if I was to say an organization, it's got to have the right culture, right? The culture that allows for failure, allows for learning versus deeming it failure and pointing fingers and potentially exiting someone based on an experimentation gone sideways, right? So I think that's a key thing, is to have a culture that allows for that. But 100%, it's about individuals. I haven't seen any implementations that started from scratch, let's say, and we often call them Gen 1, that didn't have someone being the champion and really driving it forward and being creative and moving it forward, or someone that's done it before being transplanted to a new organization to run the programs, right, and start them up and run them. So I truly believe it's that expertise and that knowledge and that willingness to take some risks and do the crazy thing we call centralizing a contingent workforce all through one technology and one program has lots of caveats to it and lots of balls that you have to juggle. And usually it's someone a little bit crazy, I would say, to take that on.
Yeah. And I think experimentation is such a good word, because it gives people permission to try things out, and it's a pilot. And hey, this is, you don't have to boil the ocean. Let's just experiment in this function or this location. I like that a lot. I think that's great advice. So as we think about, you mentioned earlier how easy it is now, how much easier it is to get work done anywhere in the world. That obviously means the globalization of work. And I think that right now we're seeing, certainly across our client base, a real demand to put that work elsewhere in the world where the people are. And that isn't just about labor arbitrage anymore. It's where's the talent? Because, you know, we take technology in the US right now, and as of this month, you know, it's sub 2% unemployment, which probably means zero. So you've got to put the work elsewhere. And we're starting to see these hubs of expertise popping up in these different locations, which I think is fascinating. And I'm guessing that's one of the drivers for you to launch your latest venture independently. So can you just share with the audience just a few sentences about that?
Yeah, like my experience, of course, for the foreseeable past, you know, last 10, 15 years, has been in the employer of record and the agent of record. So it's employer of record, payrolling, and IC compliance, right? Yeah. And specifically, the last 4 or 5 years was with People 2.0, when we essentially did a lot of M&A across the globe, and we could employ both temporary employees and independent contractors in like 50, 60 countries, that we were the in-country specialists. And the demand for that service continued to grow. The complexities of the regulations and the variation of the payroll taxes and the currency exchanges and all of those types of things really is an obstacle to often engaging these global talent, right? So what, you know, and I'll talk from a buyer in North America, right? Buyer in North America hires someone in Texas and, you know, let's call it a W-2 or a temporary employee. And it's 11% government remittances for that W-2. So, you know, plus a markup, let's just say as 5% markup plus 11, you're 16% on top of that $100 an hour, right? And those are fictitious numbers. Don't quote me. I haven't been payrolling for a long time, so I don't know what the statutories are. But it's $116 for a 100-an-hour worker.
Yeah.
That same worker in Italy, right, you thought you were going to get 100, and it turns out to be about 175 or sometimes closer to double. And the reason being is they have very different statutories, and they also have different employment laws that workers are paid their vacation pay for 2 months. So they have this mysterious thing that a North American buyer goes, what the heck is 13th and 14th salary? And it's 2 months vacation pay, right? Yeah. And so that what you thought, you're getting the best talent and you're going to pay a reasonable price, it becomes a little out of reach. So the whole idea of smoothing that, right, with the idea of, with the trends in independent contracting, first and foremost, there's a lot of senior people. There's, you know, such a trend with the platforms out there where more and more of the workforce is actually choosing to be independent contractors. And there's reasons why they're doing this, for not only the lifestyle flexibility, but a lot of governments, payroll taxes and income tax has gone incredibly high for high income earners. And so to have a small business with lower tax rates and being able to write things off versus high personal tax rates as a temporary employee, they're motivated financially to be independent contractors too. And so both that smoothing of, hey, I'm just going to invoice you at $100 an hour, plus maybe some sales tax, and you're going to pay that no matter who you hire around the globe. And then on the other side, the talent choosing to be small businesses because it's optimized tax structure for high income earners, that really has really, I saw those trends, and in doing that said, what is the obstacle for that to happen? Well, you know, the regulations are complex. And so to build a very simplistic app that becomes that standard compliance operating system that vets ICs in global jurisdictions, as well as what I would call the 50, you know, United Countries of America, because each of them have different tests often for ICs too, to make it simple and that the end buyer uses a standard background check like tool to then have confidence that they're buying in it, the services of an independent contractor, no matter the source, be it a staffing agency, an online platform, or direct for that matter too, and run it through accounts payable. That's one of the obstacles to that happening. And so that's, for some reason, I decided to take on the crazy task of doing it. And we just launched late last year, and it's been going well so far.
Great. Well, congratulations on that. A much needed service. So good luck for the future with it. So I have one final question before I ask our final question. So penultimate question. Just get your view on the ever the evergreen topic of who should own the contingent labor force inside an organization, procurement or HR or a mix of both. And what do you, are there any trends of that? We have our view from our lens, but where do you think that that journey is at right now?
Well, it's been interesting that centralized management of the contingent workforce came during that 2007 to 2010 cycle economic downturn. And it was deemed cost save, a free way to cost save, right? And we did. Like the industry, by centralizing it, managing rates properly, you know, understand creating visibility, did save enormous amounts of money for organizations, right? And so it made sense at that time, and it was the champion was procurement, even though it was talent, because often it's called external talent, right, or external services. And so procurement grabbed those reins. And HR often said, well, that's external talent. I like nurturing relationships with my internal full-time employees, et cetera. And so that's how it began. But, you know, the trend towards it actually being talent and recognized as talent has constantly marched forward. And the whole discussion around direct sourcing and the scarcity of resources that we have in the marketplace today is where organizations have to take responsibility to find this talent. You're finding more and more HR and talent acquisition jumping into being a lot more involved. And in a lot of cases, potentially taking it over. This downturn has also shone a light on duplication of things within an organization and direct sourcing. Why would you have a direct sourcing tool that looks a lot like an ATS, right? And a curation team that you're paying for on the procurement team that's finding, the tasks that they're actually doing looks a lot like the recruiters in the TA team. And so organizations are saying, you got to pick where this is going to be. And usually it's a talent conversation. Right. So we're seeing more and more shift towards talent. And the direct sourcing conversation has been actually shedding a light on that as people are escalating it and saying, I need money for curation or a technology that centralizes the tracking of candidates, which sounds a lot like an HR system, right?
Yeah, it's interesting how direct sourcing has almost been that conduit between HR and procurement and now hardwiring.
In saying that, though, it's still external resources that you need to deal with a vendor contract. And guess what? It's a heck of a lot of money and spend still. And I ask a lot of HR folks about that, and they don't like using their calculator and negotiating hard with vendors. So having procurement skills within the HR groups, I think, is that optimum scenario, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get into skills-based organizations, but perhaps in the future, those will be skills that will be in HR, will be procurement. But so to come to our final question, so, and we always ask the same one to all of our guests, the dreaded crystal ball. But if we are having a beer 5 years' time, how does the industry look different to how it does today?
It's just going to continue to advance the seedlings we're seeing right now, where the gig economy, the platform economy continues to grow. Interestingly enough, though, when I say that, I'm not saying traditional staffing firms are going to go the way of the dodo bird. They're catching up with being technology-enabled staffing firms, and we're seeing a lot of the platforms putting enterprise solutions behind the curtain. Yes. And what that means is actually putting people behind the sexy technology interface, right? And so you're seeing this convergence of similarities, but I see that continuing to drive forward, because as consumers, we're getting used to self-checkout. we're getting used to a lot more self-service. And so that technology enablement of staffing and the technology that's already there with the platforms will continue. I think gig work and the whole idea of task-based work will continue to grow. I think we've talked about the global workforce. I think that will continue to be a trend because that whole idea of regulation, technology is starting to solve some of those complexities that would have been, I'll just hire someone local as well. Yeah. And so, you know, I do see those trends as well and lots of opportunity everywhere to continue to be in the staffing industry and the contingent workforce management industry. And that's why I continue to not golf and continue to be in this crazy industry.
You and me both, brother. Well, thank you so much for your insight and conversation today. It's been a lot of fun. Very insightful as always. Really, really appreciate you, Jeff. And just one last thing, where can people find you online to connect with you?
I'm pretty easy to find online on LinkedIn primarily. I run a LinkedIn group that I started back many, many moons ago that has a lot of individuals in it called Contingent Workforce Strategies, but I'm just easy to find on LinkedIn most likely, and my emails and phone numbers are there, and I'm always open to having conversations with people. This is an amazing industry that's been very good to both you and I, and happy to have conversations about it, almost geeking out about it because I've been to many cocktail parties with friends that are lawyers and accountants and, you know, those types of things. And you always say, this is what I do. And they go, you're a recruiter? And I'm like, well, something like that. And so to have others that embrace it and love talking about it too is always fun.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
Take care. Thank you, Bruce.
If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have questions, please send them to subjecttotalent@leadersglobalsolutions.com. Follow us on LinkedIn with the hashtag subjecttotalent and learn more about AGS at leadersglobalsolutions.com, where you can find additional workforce insights and past episodes. Until next time, cheers.